Forest fires in Indonesia create a haze over much of Southeast Asia during the dry season. This year is shaping to be one of the worst yet due to bone-dry conditions caused by the El Niño phenomenon, which alters weather patterns in the Pacific Basin. In 1997, Sumatra suffered from what are considered the worst fires on record in a disaster that cost an estimated 11 billion euros. I spoke to Robert Field, a Columbia University scientist at NASA's Goddard Institute for Space. He explains NASA saw this year's disaster coming back in May.
I think it's very unlikely that this event, sort of total emissions-wise, will exceed 97, because in Kalimantan, that burning and the underlying drying started a month earlier. So I doubt that will be exceeded, but that's not to diminish the severity of the current situation. It's frustrating seeing this sort of this need for this event to beat, to be worse than 97, to be extremely bad. It's the conditions on the ground have been horrible. Air quality wise, there have to be alternatives to burning, you know, in the context of bigger decisions about economic growth versus how to use Indonesia's incredible forest and land resources, which are big, complicated questions. There just can't be any burning on those degraded peatlands. That has to be part of it, is regardless of what the larger scale plans are, there can't be any burning on degraded peatlands.
Field explains the damage these fires cause.
In other places in the world, fire is an important and natural part of the forest ecology. It's necessary for forest regeneration and forest health, and that's just not the case in Indonesia. It has an ecological impact there that's detrimental. And then the other component is that it makes Indonesia a disproportionate greenhouse gas emitter. The emissions of the current fires in the context of fossil fuel emissions from other major industrialized countries. Earlier on in the episode, the emissions exceeded those of Germany's annual fossil fuel emissions, and recently they've exceeded Japan's. The 1997 event, the conservative estimate, I think, was that the emissions from those burning alone represented 13% of the global mean annual fossil fuel emissions at the time. So that's, you know, that's something to consider after the fact, once the event is over and the air quality impacts have gone away. But overall, it makes Indonesia a disproportionate emitter of greenhouse gases relative to the size of the economy, for example.
The situation on the ground in Indonesia is dire. Jacqueline Sunderland Grove, the deputy CEO of the Borneo Orangutan Survival Foundation, explains how these great apes are still struggling to cope.
Response was very poor initially. We were fighting fires on our own much of the time in the beginning, which was also very scary. Luckily, some of our teams had fire training, but one of the biggest problems is water, is getting water, and so they've had to dig these huge great big holes in the ground, these boreholes, to try and get water constantly, because it's just running out everywhere. And for local people living in that area, I mean, you've seen the photos, you've seen this thick yellow smog, basically. You can't see more than 20 metres in front of you, 25 metres in front of you, and people are really, really struggling, they're really suffering. And the same with the orangutans, they're also suffering. And of course, orangutans won't wear masks like people, so there's only so much we can do to protect them. We've had to shut down some of our forest schools temporarily. The babies in the nursery don't go out at the moment, just simply because they can't breathe outside. But unfortunately, a lot of people in Kalimantan don't have the option of staying indoors, because they can't afford air conditioning and they can't afford to seal up their house sufficiently, and so they're breathing in this thick toxic smoke constantly.
The haze causes sickness, malnutrition and severe trauma as fires rage through the habitat and force them into a charred wastelands. 99% of these forest fires are started deliberately, according to Indonesia's disaster agency. This means the phenomenon could be prevented. Peatlands where the fires are lit are probably the world's most critical carbon stores, and Indonesia is storing about 35 billion tons of the world's reserves. Rhett Butler, the founder of Manga Bay, an environmental news outlet, explains why fires continue to occur.
The fires are caused by a couple of things. And so in the short term, the fires were set by people. So people are lighting fires, clear land, usually for palm oil, but sometimes for other things. And so many of those fires are set by people who are smallholders, essentially small farmers. And so, you know, companies will point to them as being, you know, the culprits in these fires. But the reality is that the companies are the ones who created the conditions that made these fires possible. So, you know, that includes, you know, clearing forests, but also draining peatlands. And so when you drain a peatland, that greatly increases the vulnerability to fire of that area. And so while the fires might have immediately been lit by smallholders, big companies also bear an important responsibility in driving the conditions that enable those fires.
He continues by explaining that Indonesia wants to supply international demand.
There's been this huge surge in palm oil consumption in the past 20 years. And so as a result, Indonesia has greatly expanded its oil palm concessions. And so while Indonesia, is a producer, we're all consumers. So anyone who consumes, snack food products or cosmetics that contain palm oil are in some small part contributing to this problem. So we can point fingers at the Indonesian government or Indonesian companies, but really we also need to take some sort of responsibility since it's our consumption that's really driving the conditions that causes these fires.
Butler says it's not even worth it economically speaking.
One of the issues is that the fires are currently projected to cause $50 billion. So that's essentially wiping out all of Indonesia's economic growth for a year. So yeah, while palm oil is, a commodity that's, generated a lot of revenue, the reality is these fires are very expensive, and that's probably not even factoring in the long-term cost. So if you want to develop a sustainable, healthy economy, you need to factor in all the long-term costs. The other thing that's not really talked about is, palm oil prices have crashed, and so there is a risk, an economic risk, with putting all your eggs in one basket and investing so much in this commodity that can essentially be produced in any country. So my hope is that this whole crisis will cause a reevaluation of that strategy of converting something that makes Indonesia unique, which is its forests, into a mass market commodity, whether that's actually a wise economic decision in the long run.
The catch-22 is that Indonesia remains a developing country and needs to stay on the international market despite calls from the international community to put an end to the burning of lands. Eri Purnomo, a scientist at the Indonesia-based Center for International Forestry Research, says that corruption is at the heart of the issue.
The primary cause is the patronage network between the company and also with those who have power. Corruption is our enemy in Indonesia in every sector, including, of course, forestry and agriculture. The government has tried to put those who burn forest and land in jail, but not only that, need to revoke the permit, also to sentence not only the director, also the commissioner of those companies. Because sometimes the commissioner is a way to have a connection between the company and the strong guys at the community as well as at the government level.
At an international level, countries neighboring Indonesia decided to take it into their own hands to thwart the companies. Brett Butler explains how both the international community and the Indonesian government try to put in place laws to prevent the fires.
The problem with the firefighting is it's just really expensive and it's already too late, so we really need to address the underlying causes. And so because the haze is so bad this year, it's created this political momentum to try to address this issue. The big concern is that that momentum will disappear after the fires go away. But my personal feeling is that things are so bad this year that it will hopefully carry through. And so, Singapore, after the 2013 fires and haze that hit Singapore so hard, Singapore passed a law that would allow it to fine international companies for causing fires and causing haze. And so, it took that really severe haze event to drive some sort of political commitment to actually start to address the problem. So that was important. And so I feel like that could be a model for what's happening this year. And so my hope would be that Malaysia, Singapore, Thailand, Australia would further that cause and, put pressure on these companies to really start to address deforestation in their supply chain.
Monsoon season usually begins in November in Indonesia, which should put an end to the fires. However, Robert Field says that even though the haze will disappear, Indonesia needs to monitor the weather closely in the coming months.
Under El Nino conditions this strong, there's the possibility in the new year of sort of a separate secondary dry period in East Kalimantan and Sabah. And it's quite local to those regions, but that was the case in 97-98, where the fires died down in Sabah and East and North Kalimantan. There was sort of a secondary drying period and then severe fire activity. So on one hand, the fire won't persist through December just because there's an El Nino, but there can be this secondary drying period that's local and that's bad enough to cause severe, more localized fires there. None of this is guaranteed, but after this event is done, it's important to watch, to monitor conditions and forecasts for those regions specifically.
For RFI, I'm Clea Broadhurst.